Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here we are. And good morning. It's Friday, the 12th of August. Welcome to Wisconsin's Coffee Break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here. And those of you watching on Facebook or Twitter or catching us later on can tell that it's supposed to be Dad Shirt Friday with the hashtag Dad Shirt Friday. But we have already started a fierce debate on what exactly constitutes a dad shirt, because it turns out you can look at a shirt and go, is that really a dad shirt, or is that just a straight up Hawaiian shirt? And are they the same thing? And then, as we mentioned last week, you got those bowling shirts, you know, like Charlie Sheen used to wear. So where, Luke, is the Venn diagram of dad shirts, Hawaiian shirts, and just straight up ugly, embarrassing shirts? You know, and you know who gets to call it that? Daughters versus the dads, you know, of course.
I don't know. See, this is some scientific evidence that we need to get into. We need to figure out this Venn diagram, because I thought mine, you're telling me mine's just straight up Hawaiian, but I feel like
it's not just Hawaiian. Folks, he's wearing a black t-shirt, a crew neck t-shirt underneath it. So this
I get dressed in the dark.
From Hawaiian back to dad, because with that black t-shirt, you can already see underneath. The camera's not there, but you can see the black socks and sandals as he's walking on the beach.
I am a strong proponent, not on the beach. I would not wear socks in my Birks on the beach.
I would definitely
wear socks and sandals when I'm going out to walk the dog. Like, I don't have a problem with that. I'm a strong proponent for wearing socks with my Birks when needed, because I love wearing my Birkenstocks. They're comfortable, and sometimes it's a little too cold that you need socks on as well.
Socks and Birkenstocks.
Exactly.
First off, that sounds like a cafe you'd find only in Madison. But second, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to put some thought into that. In the meantime, if any of you decided that it's also Dad Shirt Friday, use that hashtag, post it on social media. Feel free to, you know, tag us along with it as well. We have a surprise guest at 8:30, who's making a surprise announcement. And the only thing that I'll say about that is don't go shopping for your weekend provisions until you hear what our guest is putting on Wisconsin shelves very shortly. Let's see what here. 9:15, UWM School of Freshwater Sciences Professor Melissa Scanlon will talk to us about the climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act that will be passed by the House of Representatives later today. As we heard yesterday from Congressman Mark Pocan. And then at 10 a.m., I know we mentioned Christina Lori would be joining us. We're actually instead going to have Dr. Kristen Lyerly, our friend who's an OBGYN, and Dr. Ann Helms, who's a critical care neurologist. And they were two of the doctors participating yesterday as the Committee to Protect Healthcare talked about what a Tim Michaels win in the governor's race would mean for Wisconsin women and their health. And it is not great news based on what we've heard from Tim Michaels so far. I would love to tell you, looking at things from last night, that I watched the Field of Dreams baseball game, but I caught only a small part of it. And I don't know if you saw any of it, Luke. I mean, it looked beautiful, the little bit that I saw. You know, it's one of those things that only in Hollywood.
No, that happens in Iowa.
Yeah, I know. Is this heaven? No, it's Iowa.
They have an official corn sponsor for that game now, which is I find it fascinating that MLB has a official corn partner for the Field of Dreams games that I believe they plan on doing every year now.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to do every year, and I'm not surprised, because I mean everything in agribusiness is extremely competitive, and you know I think we take the farmers for granted that there's always competing interests with us, like, you know, Coke versus Pepsi or this versus that, and the same goes for, you know, seed corn and all kinds of other things, because, you know, again, farmers don't buy things lightly. They're the original bulk buyers, and so no, I'm not surprised. The corn looked great yesterday, man. I don't know what their precipitation has been like this year, how much of that was, you know, kind of ginned up a bit, but it was a good looking field, and I would love to see, you know, the Brewers playing the Cubs or the Sox, you know, in some future game.
I saw an idea get thrown out there on social media last night where it was that the Brewers should play the Guardians and they should have Euchre do the broadcast and do kind of a major league mashup and have some of the stars from major league come. And they're like, we could even have a streaming service do it, so it doesn't have to have the FCC, and you can have some actual fun with the you could have some Euchre and
famous lines from major league. Yeah,
exactly. And some of the other casts, you could have Charlie Sheen, as we've already mentioned him in his bowling shirts today. Can't remember the other actor's name who has the iconic line at the end of the movie with strike this guy out, but doesn't say guy.
Well, that was that was the third baseman. But that's so good. And I was actually in Milwaukee, living in Milwaukee when they were filming Major League at County Stadium. And they made a big deal about it. Of course, it was on the radio every day. Like, hey, we need a big crowd at the stadium, you know, for this scene or that scene. And I never made it there because, as I've mentioned, my wife was in medical school at the time. We had a newborn and, you know, a 2-year-old. And so I passed by several. We would drive past County Stadium, you know, at night, and, you know, the all lit up and you could see a crowd in there, even though there was no baseball game. And so it was a real hoot to see that when it came out in the theater. And it's still fun to watch it today. We'll talk more about, you know, the actual Brewers and how they did coming up in just a bit and more. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlau. One of the things we got to do is cue up the movie itself. That part where, you know, Charlie Sheen is coming out of the bullpen, the crowd is going wild. And again, that whole behind the scenes thing, people love to talk about how, you know, when you're using that many extras in filming a movie, and you've really got to work to get people pumped up because there's no actual game going on, you know, and you've got to get them cheering for Charlie Sheen like crazy, as if, you know, the playoffs really are on the line. And, you know, like I said, people did it, came together. It was a great movie. In real life, the Brewers were off yesterday. They began 3 games in St. Louis against the Cardinals. Eric Lauer's pitching at 7:15 tonight, and then 6:15 Saturday, 1:15 on Sunday. And then this is a very unusual schedule for the Brewers next. After they get done with these 3 in St. Louis, on Monday, they begin 4 games versus the LA Dodgers, then 3 games next weekend at Wrigley Field, then 3 games at LA to play the Dodgers, and then 3 at home against the Cubs. So there's consistency in the teams and inconsistency on where they wake up on any given day. So it'll be a unique stretch after all these, let's see, 3, 7, 10, 16. These 16 games are the most critical, Luke. I know I said it about the 3 games this weekend, but I really believe these 16 are it. That's the season right there.
This is going to be the first. I believe these are the only 2 series against the Dodgers as well. And so they, I forget if it's the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets right now, who are the hottest team in baseball, but we got to avoid sweeps for sure. But I think if we split
that
series,
that's right. Cotton, sweeps are bad.
And this is what I'm saying. If they are going and they kind of split the 4 game series, 2 apiece against the Dodgers, and they win the series against the Cubbies, I have a feeling that it's going to be fine.
Well, Cubs like Pittsburgh, you know, you got to beat teams like that. You can be forgiven for what you do with the Dodgers, but I mean, it really is do or die this weekend against the Cardinals. You can't keep losing ground to them. Weather-wise, there's no. It's one of those days where the weather really does have a big difference on whether you're on the west side of the state or the east side, as showers, rain, thunder, some, you know, not severe thunderstorms, but, you know, a little bit of thunder rumbling in, all from west to east. So here on the western side of the state today, we already have a rainy morning. That will come to the eastern half of the state later, and perhaps much later in the day. And by the time that happens, it's going to start to get nice again on the western side of the state and start to warm up. But today's going to be cooler, especially as that rain comes through. But as we talked about, whether it's cornfields or otherwise, it is sorely needed. Our apologies if it ruins any of your plans, but it's something that we've got to have. It was not rainy yesterday at the Wisconsin State Fair as some visitors came through, and what a fearsome foursome this was. You have Tim Michaels, the new Republican nominee for governor, his running mate for lieutenant governor, Roger Roth, the new attorney general nominee for Republicans, Eric Toney, and then the man, the myth, the legend, former Wisconsin governor, Tommy Thompson. All coming through the Wisconsin State Fair in a show of unity.
Did you see the variety of outfits that they had too? It was all the same colored shirt and they just kind of varied pants colors, but they looked similar.
That was one of my first impressions was seeing that was like, do I have to like burn all my khakis now? I mean, this was not, if you had the JCPenney or the Sears catalog, you know, in the 1970s, this wasn't that far from it. And yeah, it was like the official, you know, Republican uniform with the dress shirt and then just different kinds of khakis or slacks to go along with it. But look at the difference between those who have experience in politics and, you know, understand the need for, I don't know, manners, you know, versus those who are new into this and think that it's got to be, you know, all-star wrestling all the time. You know, you've got Tommy Thompson, who, you know, agree or disagree with him, has been a class act as he's left the governorship. He has stood up to fellow Republicans at times when it comes to COVID. And when asked about Rebecca Clefish, he said, she's a young lady. She's got a lot of talent. We'll see her again. And, you know, those things could all be true, whether she sticks around in politics or not, who knows. But, you know, Tommy said the right things. Young lady, a lot of talent, see her again. Contrast that with Tim Michaels. I got a call from her. Yeah, she's trying to move on with her life. I think she's a fine person. She had a lot of great followers. They're all going to come around at some time, at the right time, probably very soon, you know, making it all about him. You know, she's moving on with her life. It's just trying to push her off stage. I mean, can you be a graceful winner? If you could, please. And that's what has to happen. But instead, Michaels confirmed that he did indeed hear from former President Donald Trump on Tuesday night. There is no word here on whether Michaels asked about sensitive documents and, you know, nuclear secrets and how to handle classified information. Hopefully won't become an issue if he becomes governor. But Michaels said he congratulated me. And again, he reiterated, he said, I knew I picked the right guy because you're a businessman. You're an outsider. You're not a career politician. And that's what's needed in government to get things done. Probably the least true thing ever said that has done more damage to politics in our generation than anything else. And not true. Tim Michaels is not an outsider. Tim Michaels was the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in 2004 and got beat by Russ Feingold. He has run for state Senate before in the late 90s. He is a regular donor to Republican causes. He's been inside all of the behind the scenes groups, you know, from road builders onwards. He is anything but an outsider. He is a wealthy Connecticut businessman who sees that, you know, if you can put $10 million of your own money into a race, you can beat the, you know, the establishment candidate, but not an outsider. And I don't know how many times we have to learn the same lesson. Government's not a business. People who say government should be a business or try to run it like a business have always failed and always will fail because they are not in any way the same thing. But Michaels instead says at the fair yesterday, and this is from Isaac Yu of the Journal Sentinel, people come up to me all the time and say, thank you for running. I'm tired with what's going on in politics right now. I hear it all the time. They say, I'm in a union and they tell me to vote Democrat, but the Democratic Party has left me. It's all about social issues now for the Democratic Party. Bull, stop. We're going to call bull on that every single time when they say it's all about social issues. Again, if there's one thing you should be able to do in public service, it's walk and chew gum. If, again, all you're thinking about is running like a business and looking for a profit, you know, rather than service, then you're not going to get the other half of the equation of public service, and that is opportunity. presenting everybody with equal opportunities, which again, not equal outcomes, equal opportunities to get an education and to access the workplace and to access healthcare. And instead, there is this continued fairy tale that depicts progressives as being all about wokeness and all about social issues, when in fact, this is a side of the aisle that is all about helping people reach economic prosperity through opportunities, and while at the same time, providing that common human decency. Remember, we said this when the show first started about wokeness, and when you hear the word woke, woke is nothing more than don't be an ass. That's it. Don't discriminate against somebody. Don't hate somebody because of who they are. Don't treat somebody differently. Don't discriminate because you don't like their religion or you don't like their gender choices. If they are living their own life, they don't need your permission. The great Bill Russell passed away recently, NBA legend. And I heard that one of his great quotes when he talked about, the chances that he took during the civil rights era, the way that he stood up for others, was, and I'll try not to mess up the line here, but he said, "My citizenship is not a gift. It is a birthright." That to him meant he does not need somebody's permission, white, black, or otherwise, male, female, or otherwise. He does not need somebody else's permission to be a citizen and to have the rights and opportunities that come with citizenship. It does not mean he wants to be treated more favorably. It means he wants to be treated equally, and that is not happening. If that's wokeness, then yeah, you can try to use it as a pejorative, but all that really means is be a decent person. So when somebody like Tim Michaels says it's all about social issues now for the Democratic Party, he's not telling you the truth. He's ignoring the fact that Democrats and progressives have been working tirelessly for generations now on economic issues, making sure that somebody is getting a living wage. There's no reason anybody in America should work full-time hours and still be in poverty. There's something wrong there. And so that, for example, is not a big government mandate, to pay a decent wage, because, employers, businesses are not entitled. They're not entitled to cheap labor. They have the opportunity to run a business, but if they can't run that business without cheap labor that keeps their own workers in poverty, well, they're not entitled to have that. If their business doesn't succeed, it doesn't succeed. That's why we have, labor standards. It's why we have consumer standards. It's why we have environmental standards. Those things are what truly help build an economy for all, not just the investors, not just the owners, not just the employers. And so, yes, that's what progressives do on both sides. They do take stances on social issues, but also on economic fairness and opportunity. But Michaels says that for him, it's only about the economy. And Michaels said in this article, his number one priority is, quote, "a strong economy and great jobs for the hardworking, tax-paying, law-abiding citizens of Wisconsin." And I'm going to jump all over that one where he says the law-abiding citizens of Wisconsin, because again, this is what they're going to do for, 90, 89 days now. It's all about law-abiding and law and order. And again, it's all about, scaring people and making people think that they are surrounded by those who are ready to break the law or who aren't taxpayers. He enjoys that fantasy that people on the lower end of the income spectrum are takers rather than makers, and that they don't pay taxes. They hate the fact that some people actually make so little money that they can't pay income taxes, while completely ignoring the taxes that they still have to pay, whether it's through their rent or their mortgage, trying to keep a house over their heads, the sales taxes that they pay, the license fees for everything from, driving their car and more. There's plenty of taxes being paid by everybody. There's very few people that pay no taxes. We are tax-paying and law-abiding citizens in Wisconsin. We do, as Tim Michaels says, want a strong economy and great jobs. But we also want them under conditions where anybody who wants to work hard can get that opportunity to have that job, to advance, to not feel unsafe at work, to not feel persecuted because of who they are, who they love, what religion they are. These are the things we want. That's what you find in a well-rounded package of a candidate, not somebody who claims to be a businessman and an outsider with that very narrow focus of, you know, the money, the money, the money. We have a special guest coming up after this next break and a special product soon to be on Wisconsin shelves. We'll talk about that next. This is Up North News.
Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Pringle.
Well, you know, we can't tap dance too long before we jump right into our guest, and you know, any friend of the show knows that it would be Kirk Bangstad from the Minocqua Brewing Company, ready to tell us about the new brew that's coming out amongst as many progressive beers and other beverages. How are you, young man?
Hey, how you doing, Pat? Thanks for having me on this morning. I didn't think I'd be on this early. I had to take a quick shower, man.
I didn't either. But then, you know, you are extremely good at Facebook marketing. And about an hour ago, up pops a little message saying that the next brew is ready to be unveiled. And so I reached out, you know, right away and asked if you could, you know, try to make yourself presentable. And thank you for doing that. And, you know, so
You don't know what's on underneath the shirt, bro.
We don't even have to talk about that. It's okay. So let's have you go ahead and do the setup and reveal. And all I'll do to tee it up for you is say that you didn't know what the next brew was going to be until last week. So you were prepping, you know, a few different things here.
Yeah. So, okay. So yeah, I put it as my back for those on Facebook and whoever's watching live, I put it on as my background for this video on Zoom. So yeah, I'll move my face and head. So
there it is.
It's Mandela Mash. The tagline is the only sane choice for U.S. Senate. And I call it a legit lager.
It's no doubt. I love the beer that won't embarrass you in public. The beer that comes in an aluminum can, not a tinfoil hat. Beer that was made in America, not Russia. With a clean finish, the taste doesn't lie. Available next week only in Wisconsin. Call your favorite store today and ask them to stock their shelves so every Wisconsinite, red or blue, can sip from this fresh new savior of American democracy. The aluminum can, not a tinfoil hat. That's chef's kiss. I don't know if that was you or somebody else, but that's perfect. You know.
Well, I woke up this morning and I was like, today's the day because it's coming out on Tuesday. And I always probably announce these things a little early. But this one I didn't want to announce too early because it just was too good. You know, I mean, it was like we knew this was going to come out as soon as the primary was over, but we didn't know who was going to win. So we made a Sarah Godbrewski beer.
Godbrewski.
We made a Lazary lager and we made a Mandela mash. And so it all had the same, it all had the same background. It all had the same front, except for the picture of the person. And so we had to make all those labels. The printer was like, you're going to print the day after the primary. But then when everybody dropped out, it was pretty clear. So we got to jump on it. The beer has been made. It's been waiting to go. And so we got to jump on printing the labels and we're able to release it a little earlier.
I'm pretty sure that that Lazary is prepared to write you a very big check to go ahead and make the Lazary Lager too, and that'll be sold at Bucks games, you know, maybe later on. So
we may have to change the label though, because it says the sanest choice or the only sane choice for U.S. Senate. So
oh yeah, we can tweak the artwork. I'm just saying, if you're willing to make a Lazary Lager, I think he's willing. And so would Sarah. I think Sarah would the funds that were going to be used in the general election campaign, because I think she should keep herself out there too. What her best, she had the best campaign hook for her events, you know, Brewskis with Godlewski. Yeah. So, you know, why not have that too? Because Look, we talked about this with the 3rd Congressional District. We should talk about it with the Senate race as well. And that is the need for party unity. After this primary, it is the people who lose these races. And as I said yesterday, I know from, you know, working with my friend Dana Walks, it is never easy. You feel You know, you kind of feel like people have, you know, turned their back on you and you want to return the favor, but they really haven't. They've made a choice. It needs to be respected. And then, you know, this is what you do to prevent either a third term of Ron Johnson or even worse, the election of Derek Van Orden in Congress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we refrained, in the Monaco Brewing Company, we endorsed in the third congressional district. We didn't endorse in this one because we loved the candidates. I mean, there were so many good ones. Anyone's going to be good. So we just thought, you know, this, everyone can spend millions of dollars to do a TV commercial and everybody's going to hate Wisconsin for the next 3 months because it's going to be one negative ad after the next. But this kind of thing, people haven't really done before. You haven't put beer can. I mean, I've done it before in the last year, but like you put faces of politicians on grocery store shelves. You tell a little story behind them and why you support them. And it's like a different way of advertising that hopefully reaches people that's positive. I haven't put a negative beer out yet because you want, A, I want people to drink it, and B, I want people to just see something on a shelf and laugh or be happy, you know? So that's hopefully what this will do.
I actually think it is that kind of positive marketing that we need more of. It's better to say you support something. It always is. People are always looking for that, you know, validation. Yes, whether it's Republican or Democrat, it's like what have we always said? When people tell you lawn signs don't vote, tell them bull. they do, because that's positive validation, you know, from your neighbors. And it only really works if it's positive. Every time I see somebody with a sign or a flag that says, "Let's go, Brandon," I don't think that actually motivates the people that they think it does. It speaks to a very tiny and frankly, very sick sliver of the population, you know, compared to at least just a generic Trump sign, Trump flag. And the same goes with these products, whether it's, you know, beer or what have you. People want to be for something these days as much as they're able.
Yeah. I mean, look at this can. I mean, Mandela Barnes, there's nothing to not like about the guy. I mean, right. He is inspiring. He comes from a working class family. I don't think there's been a black senator in Wisconsin state.
No, I don't think so. No. We talked to Angela Lang from Block about that yesterday. And, you know, one of the real strengths of Mandela is the way that he can talk about, you know, his working class background. Yes, coming from the zip code in Milwaukee with the highest level of incarceration because of that level of poverty and desperation and inequities. And like we talked about in the last segment, we need more opportunities, you know, to learn, opportunities to advance. Mandela shows that can be done. It's a positive message that he can bring all around the state, and, you know, contrast that with Ron Johnson is either bringing negative messages, you know, he'll talk about, you know, crime or whatnot, or he'll have negative messages about the economy, like, oh, you know, we don't need any more jobs here in Wisconsin, or he'll bring the tinfoil hat and talk about this conspiracy or that conspiracy. There's not a lot positive coming out of him.
Well, I mean, it's not just Mandela's zip code. I mean, I've lived in 54467 Plover, Wisconsin, 54481 Stevens Point, Wisconsin, 54548 Minocqua, Wisconsin. There are people suffering, middle class people who are getting poorer and poorer while the rich get richer and richer in all of these places in rural Wisconsin, just like in inner city Milwaukee. And this guy gets it for all of them. And hopefully he can break through and get some of those folks who are desperate, who are voting for Trump and voting for Republicans, who are desperate to get by, understand that they're voting against their best interests. I'm hoping he can break through for some of that.
Well, and I think too, again, coming back to our Angela Lang discussion yesterday, there's a difference between recognizing the ways that you've been marginalized. And that happens if you're a kid from a family like mine, you know, where you're on food stamps, you're in line with your mom getting food stamps, you're marginalized. There's opportunities that you don't have that other people have, and that you want to fight for people and help people understand the ways they're marginalized. Contrast that with that sense of victimhood. And that's what we often get from, you know, this stereotypical, you know, angry white voter who, you know, just wants to be angry about everything and lash out and blow up the system, bring in an outsider who has no idea how to operate, you know, in public service. And look for those common bonds. They, you know, whether whatever your skin color, whatever your zip code.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, this is going to go on a little bit of a tangent, but, you know, this...
Kirk, it's what we do. It's the only people left here are the ones that enjoy the tangents.
This Governor Tim Michaels guy, you know, says he's a businessman, he's an outsider. I'm like, how well has that worked for us in the past? You know, getting a businessman to be a governor or a president. I mean, I am a businessman, and I don't think I'd be a good governor, because I generally like to tell people what to do, because I'm the boss of my thing. I'm not looking for consensus as a president of my company. I'm looking to get things done and execute. And as a governor or a president, you got to look for consensus. And as a senator, you got to look for consensus. So Ron Johnson fits this mold as well. You got to work with other people in order to move the envelope a little bit. And business leaders aren't necessarily that cut out for that.
Didn't you think we would have all figured that out with Jesse Ventura as governor of Minnesota?
I know. Like, you don't
outsider showman
change, but don't vote for change with people with no experience. It's like, come on, you know, you can vote for change and have people that have been the role before, you know.
I could somewhat, you know, understand in California, they thought, oh, this actor Ronald Reagan, let's vote for him for governor. And then, you know, they tried it again as president, and you know, our economy has never been the same since, you know, our ladders of opportunity. And yet, yeah, with Jesse Ventura, and we just keep trying these outsiders, not appreciating that, you know, when you trash elites, elite is, when you use it in every other context, it means they're the best at something. They're good at something, you know?
You can have a very, and by the way, politicians and civil servants don't get paid very much. So oftentimes they're not elite, but they do have history. They have a history of an institution. They probably know their U.S. history or Wisconsin history and know where to avoid future pitfalls. A guy like Mandela has been in legislature for a long time. Like, he's been a lieutenant governor. He's understood how Wisconsin has been damaged so much in the last 10 years. In the last 12 years when Ron Johnson was around, and he knows what we need to fix it. And he's also changed, and he's also not establishment. I mean, a guy from this zip code is not going to be establishment politician in Wisconsin, you know? So he's everything. He's changed, and he's got historical understanding.
Let's talk beer for the last little bit here, because again, as somebody who likes to brew all kinds of different things and taste different things, I mean, you've made so many right now. Are you able to find those varieties that people like?
Yeah, well, this lager, I didn't want to I made a lager for Mandela because I didn't want anybody to not want to drink it because of its flavor. Mm-hmm. So we made it a basic, you know, this is a light lager, 5% alcohol by volume. It's very easy to drink. No one won't drink a lager. Some people won't want to drink an IPA because it's too hoppy. So this
is easy. we've talked about that a few times here. I'm not the world's biggest IPA fan. So yeah, Kirk, you're speaking my language.
But we're going to start branching out. I mean, we did a hard seltzer. I don't particularly like hard seltzers, but a lot of people do. We've done Kolsch's. There's the next one's coming out. There's the next two coming out are actual kind of really cool styles of beer that are kind of branching out and not like necessarily normal. And so, I've been kind of basic up until now, cause it's more about the message and the marketing, as long as it's good beer. Now we're going to actually kind of start spreading our wings with the taste of the beer.
And how it has been no small challenge to take a beer with a political theme and get it distributed, especially in your backyard, but around the Midwest as well. But I'm also seeing posts that indicate you are having some nice inroads and some nice successes.
Yeah, I mean, we've got distribution in Chicago now. We've got distribution in Minneapolis, Twin Cities, and I believe Duluth in about a week. Yeah, but it's funny. You can't go northern Wisconsin within an hour of me and get my beer, other than going to my tap room and the Lacta Flambeau reservation. It's pretty hard to find stores willing to carry my beer up there. But most of, you know, Madison, Milwaukee, the Fox Valley, we're doing good. But it's been a struggle. I mean, people have been scared to carry my beer.
Well, and we did the story at upnorthnewswi.com about a week ago. Did the story about the brewery and about the tap room and the many ways that the OBNOB, the Old Boys Network of Minocqua, has been not exactly rolling out the red carpet for one of their own business people. But you somehow have managed to, you know, to carry on, to persevere. And now we have this this lager, Mandela Mash, that will be available all the way through. And, you know, again, aluminum can, folks, not a tin foil hat. After 12 years of, as you put it, 12 years of not knowing what the flavor of the day was going to be. Nothing tasted quite right the past 12 years. Sometimes it tasted dumb or crazy or seditious. And now you got something that is just right. So all the best. Good luck with that, Kirk. Thanks a lot. Safe travels. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Pat. See you, man.
All right. We will take a little break here, wrap up this hour's conversation right after this. You're up north. All you gotta do is put a drink in my hand. I will. Hey. Friday morning, Up North News. This is Pat Kreitlow. Coming up in our next hour, Mark Jacob, former editor at both the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. And as he likes to say, he now gets to have an opinion after being an editor for many years. And he does. He and I are two peas in a pod in that we enjoyed the newsroom work that we did for decades. And now it's time to step out of, you know, the traditional newsroom and try to help newsrooms do a better job of, you know, being pro-democracy, that there is not and certainly should not be anything overtly political and certainly not anything partisan about being pro-democracy. He is not a big fan of what we would call horse race journalism when somebody is trying to burn down the racetrack. And so we'll have a good conversation about that. Also in the next hour, Professor Melissa Scanlon will talk about the climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, which will be getting its final congressional vote later today. That will be the cherry on top of a legislative Sunday, the likes of which nobody thought was going to happen, you know, early on when it appeared that, you know, Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema was, they were always going to be the ones to, you know, turn the legislative Sunday into a poopy flavored lollipop. And yeah, we drop a lot of dodgeball references here. You're just going to have to get used to that. But that legislative Sunday, you know, not only includes the American Rescue Plan, but it also included the bipartisan infrastructure law. And by the way, I'm not a fan of any of these names. I mean, the American Rescue Plan, yes. But beyond that, it was supposed to be, there was Build Back Better. Oh, the infrastructure bill was originally called the American Jobs Plan. So it was going to be the American Rescue Plan, which was the economic stimulus bill because we were still in the depths of the pandemic, followed by the American Jobs Plan. Well, the American Jobs Plan became the bipartisan infrastructure law because there were still some Republicans out there who know that infrastructure is a good thing. It's good to create infrastructure jobs. Infrastructure is good for the economy. So they thought the best way to package that, you know, as a truly bipartisan thing was to call it the bipartisan infrastructure law, because no Republicans voted for the American Rescue Plan, and no Republicans are voting for the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, Ron Johnson voted against it. Assuredly, every Wisconsin Republican will vote against it. But to get back to that bipartisan infrastructure law, when it was in the process of being passed, President Joe Biden came to Wisconsin and Minnesota. He went up to the Twin Ports, and there's a great photo, and we put it in our newsletter yesterday, of President Biden, Governor Evers, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz underneath the Blatnik Bridge in Superior and Duluth. The Blatnik Bridge was first used in 1961. So we're now talking 60 years of service. It is a huge bridge. And after all these years, it was either in need of serious work. It certainly has always needed serious maintenance. Now it's at the point where it just flat out has to be replaced. That's a tall order, you know, for any state government, even two state governments, and even a federal government. If you're taking care of, you know, one bridge, a bunch of other people are going to say, hey, wait, my bridge is, you know, we need help too. And we need our lead pipes removed, and we need to upgrade. Some of our sewer lines are still made of brick, you know, when they were laid 100 years ago. So we've known for literally decades that we need a much more massive investment in our infrastructure, because that's what previous generations did for us. They built the interstate highway system. They built schools like crazy during the baby boom years. They improved so much. And there's just too many people in my generation, you know, late baby boomers, early Gen X, who just tried to skate by, you know, on the things that were given to us without really doing enough to pay it back. And we're finally appreciating that you do need to either maintain or rebuild some of these things. And so the Blatnik Bridge was certainly a great centerpiece for the president talking about the bipartisan infrastructure law when he came here in March. Well, this week, the next step has been taken, in which the two governors, Walz and Evers, formally requested, you know, a share of money from the bipartisan infrastructure law, replacing that bridge. And it does now need just a straight up replacement. Replacing that bridge is now estimated to cost $1.8 billion. I'm going to go ahead and round it up because it's going to be a multi-year project. So by then, it's going to be north of $2 billion. It's a $2 billion project to replace a bridge that large that carries that much traffic, that much truck traffic coming out of the Twin Ports, bringing goods to the ports, bringing goods to us from the ports. It's got to be done. It's a $2 billion investment that has to be made. The state has to put up some money. The feds have to put up some money. And this week, Evers and Walz formally requested roughly $900 million from that package. There will certainly be more federal funds, you know, coming over the years, but at least as a down payment to make sure that that work is going to get started, that's the step that's been taken. So the final decision is being made, not just to rebuild, but also whether to rebuild right in that same location, or I believe the Star Tribune out of Minneapolis reported it might go just a little bit to the west, then decide whether to do it in stages so you can keep some traffic going, or, you know, I would say as tough as it's going to be, you bite the bullet and, you know, you take that thing out and you just rebuild it and get it done all at once. I don't know if that's, you know, which way they're going to go. And then they will streamline it. And those of you in the, you know, the northwest part of the state who take this bridge regularly, or if you're in Superior regularly, you'll understand what I'm going to say next, is right now the bridge ends with this kind of, you know, curly Q, you know, that takes you down onto city streets and then eventually through the city streets of Superior, past the Anchor Bar where you can get a really good burger, but eventually gets you back onto Highway 53. And US 53 will take you then down through Rice Lake and into Eau Claire. And what they have said they will definitely do is it'll be a straight shot now off the bridge and then, you know, right onto US 53, obviously off ramps for Superior, so you can still get that good burger. But, you know, really, really clean it up compared to, you know, in 1961, it was no big deal for, you know, cars to kind of wind through and cut through town. But no, they're going to clean things up very nicely. And they have to, because, I mean, that's a mile and a half long bridge that carries 33,000 vehicles a day. And so anything that we can do to streamline just that one example is a good thing. And there will be so many others that will come up, but that one was definitely the signature piece. And we need that. You see the benefits when you look at what Congressman Dave Obey did in places like Wausau when that entire interchange was rebuilt. It was a pain in the arse for the longest time, but things now go, you know, smoother, faster. It is, you know, once you, if you need to exit in Wausau or get on from there, things are much, you know, much more clear. And that's what happened in Wausau. You saw it happen with the rebuild of the 29 interchange in Green Bay and more. And this is how we make progress and how we grow our economy and how we do it the right way. Coming up in our next hour, Professor Melissa Scanlon and Mark Jacob, all after this, you're up north.